Welcome back to the FKT Podcast. I'm your host, Heather Anderson. Join me today as I talk with Monica Deca, who recently set the women's supported FKT for the 498-kilometer Pieterpot Trail in the Netherlands. She shares her strategy for preserving her feet, the value of community, and the importance of making your ferry crossings. Hi, Monica. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you.
I'm looking forward to chatting with you about a trail that I'm guessing most of our listeners have never heard of. It's the Pieterpot Trail in the Netherlands, and you recently set the supported FKT on that. Can you tell us where this trail goes and a little bit about what it's like?
It depends on where do you want to start, but I start in the north of the Netherlands, and it goes to the south of the Netherlands. So it's one of the longest of in the Netherlands, walking path. And it begins very flat because in the north, it's very, very flat. And it ends in Limburg, and that's more, yeah, there are more hills. You go through a lot of landscapes because we have a lot of different landscapes here. So it's like flat, and then you go to run to the sand and then to muddy. There was a lot of rain falling here, so it was very wet on some tracks. So you can very enjoy the landscape and see how it changes every part of the Netherlands.
Yeah, it seems like it would be a highly varied trail. I was looking at the map, and it looks like it goes very close, or does it even go over maybe the border into Germany?
Yes, yeah. Some paths are in Germany. Because in the Netherlands, there is nothing. Yeah, and it's very close to the border.
Okay, and is that the higher part of the trail where it's a little bit more hilly?
No, the hilly parts are in the Netherlands.
Okay. What is the highest point? Obviously, the lowest point is going to be sea level or maybe below sea level.
Because it's
the Netherlands.
We have below sea level. Yeah, the highest point in the Netherlands is not on the track of the Pieterpot, because that's like 360 meters of sea level, below sea level. But I don't know how it is on Pieterpot.
My experience with the Netherlands, and probably a lot of Americans' experience, is Amsterdam. And there it's lots of canals and water.
Yes.
And so are there a lot, is that a main, you said it's very varied on the Pieterpot, but is that a predominant feature as well, or is it a drier landscape?
No, it's, you have some parts that also through the water. You have to go three times over the water with the ferry. So that was also very difficult, because the ferry doesn't go that often in wintertime. So that's also, planning on what time you have to be there. So it's, three times with the ferry.
Yeah, that was a question I had actually about the logistics of this FKT. I didn't realize you had three ferry crossings. I thought there was just one. So how did that impact your effort? Obviously, I'm sure you had a plan. In fact, I'll start here. Your trip report began with, the idea became a plan, and as always, the plan did not go as expected. So obviously, you had done a lot of planning and logistics. You had probably taken into account the ferry crossings, and it sounds like maybe that didn't quite go according to plan. So can you just tell me about that? What did you mean by it didn't go as expected?
Normally, you make a plan, and it won't go the way that you expected. But in this case, I knew that I had to be in Millingen. That's like 300. I had to be there on Saturday at 10 a.m. in the morning. Otherwise, I couldn't make the ferry, the second ferry in Offerde. So I had a lot of stress for the first 300K to get there, because that ferry is only go like one in the 2 hours. So it was planning and pushing and go. But I was there on time. And the last 4K before the ferry, I had to walk. Otherwise, I have to wait too long before the ferry comes. So that went well.
Yeah. And you say that was a lot of stress for the first 300K. But this is only a 500K trail.
Yeah.
So three-fifths of the trail, you were very stressed about getting to this ferry.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
So after you made the first ferry, you knew you were going to make the second ferry.
Yeah.
Did you have a lot less stress then? Did you kind of relax? Did you catch up on your sleep? How did that affect you mentally?
Now, after I get a ferry and go to the second, then I realized how tired I was, and it became very heavy and also mental because I was so stressed up and focused to get that ferry. And then, yeah, everything came out. So, yeah, I didn't like that day. After the first ferry, the landscape was very beautiful because then it was more hilly, so more up and down. So for me, it's easier to run there. And yeah, some parts I couldn't enjoy it at all. So, yeah. But in the second ferry, I had on time. And then for the third ferry, I knew that I had a couple of hours time and to sleep. So that was nice.
What was your sleep strategy throughout? I think in your trip report, you mentioned having hallucinations.
Yeah, I want to do this with... without a lot of sleep. I want to push myself, and the self-supported fast long time now, Irene was and still sleeping in bed and breakfast, and I didn't want that. I want to, and when I was sleeping, I want to sleep outside. A lot of trails here in Belgium and the Netherlands. So for me, it was short sleeping, and only the third night I plan to sleep for like 3 hours.
How much sleep total did you get in this 4 days?
5 hours.
Wow. So basically just a little over an hour per night.
Yeah.
On average. You mentioned sleeping outside. So were you tenting? Or were you just like laying on the trail and dirt napping, as we call it in the US?
Yeah. No, I had a chair where I can lay down. So yeah. There's also one picture I sent you where you can see it. So I was sleeping outside in a chair most of the time.
And these were like at places where you were meeting your crew.
So the crew was driving. Yeah, the first day I had a crew with a camper, but I was using one hour the camper for sleeping. But the camper I had most of the time, for food and here and that. But after 2 days, they have to go. And then the crew was by car.
And how many people were on your crew? Did you have people that ran with you, or were you just meeting them at various points along the way?
There were a few people, friends of mine, that I knew that they were they were running with me. And Gabrielle, a friend of mine, she was the most of the first part. And Jabe, he was in the middle. And during the Peter Pater, there were people who knew that I was running it. So they were there and run like 10 or 20K with me and then go home again. So that was also really nice because I didn't know when or who was standing on the track or... So that was a surprise and, really, really nice.
Yeah, I would imagine kind of getting surprise people to join you, or I feel like that would bring you a lot of energy.
Yeah. Also, a few friends, I knew that they were coming and run with me. So, I didn't run alone at all. So that was very, very nice.
Wow. That's amazing. I'm sure now you have friends who've seen you in pretty rough shape.
Yeah. If you're doing an ultra, then you are really fast to know each other. So
yes.
You see everything from each other. The good part, but also the worst part.
Yeah, it's good to have people who've been there and understand, and they can push you and tell you, no, you're not giving up. Did you ever think about giving up on this, like when you were having low points?
I was texting with Irene, who has the FKT for the self-supported. And I was telling her, my feet are hurting and it's like I'm running on needles and it hurts so much. But she was telling me, when you stop, you have to try it again. And I told her, I did it and I'm not going to start a second time. So I will finish this thing. And I'm not you to... do it 3 times and then finish.
Yeah. So I just recently interviewed Jasmine Paris about her Barkley finish this year. And she kind of said the same thing, like at the very end when she was just, she felt like she had didn't have anything else to give. And she just had this thing of like, but I'm not coming back again. You know, like I am not doing this all again. You know, she's on loop 5. And so she was like, and enabled her to dig deeper. She was like, I'm not doing this again.
Yeah. And it's not that I don't want to do the distance again, but not on that path, on the Peter Pot.
So you mentioned your feet were hurting. Was it an injury or blisters or what happened?
No, I had one blister, so that's not that much. But yeah, after, I don't know, like 400K it hurts. And I think that everybody will have that experience when you are so long running, it hurts. But it's not an injury. And after a few days rest, you didn't see anything at all.
I just did the Arizona Trail and my feet hurt so much. And then as soon as I stopped, my feet were fine. Just one night of sleep is all they wanted. And it is just funny how you can be in so much pain and then your body just heals up after you've rested.
Yeah.
So going back to the trail itself for a second, so you mentioned, you know, it's kind of flatter at the beginning and then you get some hills later on. But what is the trail surface like? Are you on like bike paths, like things that are paved or gravel, or is this dirt single track, or does it vary throughout?
It's all of that. You have the Peter Pot for walkers, and you also have the Peter Pot for the bicycle, and that's a longer path, like 600K, but that's because on a lot of paths you can't cycle. So there are two different paths for the cycle and the walkers or runners. So I did the walk side for the walking. And yeah, you have, like cobblestones on the road, sand, grass, muddy, gravel, it's everything.
Oh, I can imagine running on cobblestones would make your feet hurt.
I was glad it was not Belgium because there you have a lot more of cobblestones.
Just the things you can be thankful for, when you're hurting.
Yeah. And the reason why I start in the north, because in the south it was more trail. So that's better for your feet when they hurt.
So for the Peter Pot, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of FKTs. So what inspired you to go out and set an FKT on this trail?
1 year before the Peter Pot, I did the Belgium Ultra Trail, and that started out of Belgium, and I finished that one, and it was almost K. And then I was thinking, maybe I can do a 500K and in the Netherlands. So yeah, you go to the Peter because that's the only one with that distance. And for me, I was thinking to do fast long time, but I knew that it will be hard because I'm not a really fast runner. And Irene is a really fast runner. Yeah, so it was, yeah, will it be possible or not? So for me, when I was preparing for it, then I'd say, okay, I will try it and do it in less than 100 hours. And then I hope that I can do that. So that was the plan. And my crew was really pushing me. Sometimes, so you have to go faster, otherwise you won't make it. But it was under the 100 hours, so I did make it.
So now that you've done the 400K across Belgium and the 500K across the Netherlands, do you have a K trail picked out across a different country?
Not yet. So after the Peter Pot, what do I have to do now? And I want to do 600K next year, but I don't know which one. So I have to find out.
Well, I look forward to seeing what it is you end up choosing to do.
Yeah. And I've got a few other races in the meantime. So it's not that time I will do nothing.
So going back to the beginning, you mentioned there was a lot of rain. What was the weather like? Did it rain the whole time? How did the weather impact your run?
Before I was starting, there was a lot of rain, but at the start it was sunny. So that was nice. During the way, I had sun, rain, thunderstorms, and in the night it was cold. And during the day, it was not that warm, but warm enough. So yeah, the weather was like everything, typical Dutch weather.
What were the temperatures?
I think it was like 16 or 17 degrees during the day.
That's actually not too bad. That's good. Really comfortable running weather.
That was also the reason why I did it in the end of March to start, because last year, the Belgium Ultra Trail, it was in May. And then it was, yeah, one of the first weekends that it was really warm. And I don't like to run in warm weather. So that's why I chose to do it in March.
That makes a lot of sense. I think a lot of people think about the summer months for doing FKTs or races. And sometimes that makes sense, especially, you know, if you have to deal with snow on the ground or whatever. But I interviewed quite a few people for the podcast who've done kind of in that late March, early April window. And it's a really good time because you actually want it to be cooler when you're running hard. It's actually better than heat. So we talked about your sleep strategy, but I'm curious about your food strategy, because from what I know of the Netherlands, there are a lot of bakeries and delicious things to eat everywhere. Were you stopping along the way? Was your crew feeding you? Were you just eating typical running food? How did your strategy for that work out?
Yeah, for me, food is a difficult thing because I've got food allergies. So I can't eat everything. So I planned everything. And I had everything in the car or in the camper, all kinds of food that I can eat. And a few things are typical running food, like drink with isotonic or a lot of cola, a lot of Coke. But I did eat a lot of pasta, rice, chicken, pancakes, stuff like that, normal bread. Yeah, I do like to eat normal food as long as possible. And this time because I was 4 days on the road and I could eat for 4 days normal food.
Okay. So how often were you seeing your crew?
In the beginning, it was like 20-25K. And when I was the 4 day, it was like 10K because I was so tired and like 20K, sometimes it cost me like 4 hours, so it was too long. So day four in the evening, we decided to do it every 10K, and when I get to the finish, it became a little bit longer again. But day 1, 2, and 3, it's like 20-25K.
Since you were seeing them so regularly, would you eat anything in between the checkpoints, or were you just coming in and sitting down and then eating a bunch of food and then going out, or did you carry snacks and things with you?
Yeah, I also had snacks with me because otherwise I eat too less. And you need a lot of food also during the night to stay awake. So, also carrying food with me.
Yeah, that makes sense. I don't know what kind of animal wildlife there is in the Netherlands, but did you have any encounters with animals or wildlife along the way?
You can see a lot of animals, but I didn't see it at all. Only when I was in my hallucinations, but not for real.
Okay. Hallucinating animals. All right. So what kind of advice would you give somebody for coming out and checking out this trail, either as an FKT or just to come experience it?
In the north, it's really flat. And I know that a lot of people that live in the mountains like that a lot because you can see the landscape for a few K. And when the sky is touching the ground. But It's really flat in the beginning, and the track is just on the road. And you have to enjoy the landscape that you see change the landscape when you go to the south. And that's the most beautiful thing of the Pieterpad, the landscape that changing. And also all the people who are walking the Pieterpad, because there are not a lot of people who do running it, but a lot of walkers are doing it, and they're so friendly and to chat with them, because we Dutch people like that. And you see someone and do a small chat.
How many people did you see every day? Was it constant people or were there gaps?
So you see people and then for a few hours you see no one. And in the evening and in the night you won't see people at all.
Okay. And is the Peter Plot well marked? Or do you have to have a GPS to figure it out?
No, it's marked. And there are also books with the track on it. So a lot of people follow the marks and have the book.
So one last question to wrap it up. What was your highest high and your lowest low during this FKT?
Yeah, I can't say the finish is the... I think the highest high for me was the people that are with me and motivated me, but also really support me. And I've got a stupid idea to do this, and they were there for me to really support me, to talk to me, to have fun. But also the moments that I was really tired and I was crying, they were also there for me. And on the day three and the third night, it was my lowest point. You know, I was so... I was so tired and I want to go to the finish. And yeah, it was a lot of crying. And a friend of mine who also is an ultra runner, Cindy, she was, oh, I know what you're going through. And So the friends and support, the highest point, and yeah, day and night three. The lowest point.
Yeah, I mean, it's really invaluable to have friends that can support you in things like this, especially when, you know, you're just, you know, like you said, just sitting there and crying and, you know, a total mess, and people to be like, I know how you feel, but you can do this, you know, and support you through that.
Yeah.
It really is such an incredible aspect of the ultra running and the FKT community and just good friends in general.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today and making time. I know it's a little bit late there, so I'm really glad we could make this opposite ends of the world interview work out. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thanks again, Monica, for coming on the show. You can read about her FKT on the website, fastestknowntime.com, and follow her adventures on Instagram at Monica_sport9.